The helicopters descended onto the hilltop clearing, wave after wave, a vast armada of American power. Out of them tumbled soldiers with rifles and rucksacks, returning from the invasion of Cambodia. They were mud-caked and sodden after 3 days of monsoon rain, but many were grinning and snapping pictures with their buddies. A few flashed peace signs for the television cameras, happy to have survived this madcap ordeal. The United States and its South Vietnamese allies had crossed into Cambodia precisely 2 months earlier on President Richard Nixon's orders, setting off the biggest protests of the war at home. Nixon had promised that every soldier would be out by the end of June, and they would be. The last of the rear guard would be flown back into Vietnam by 6 that evening. Major General George Casey, commander of the 1st Air Cavalry Division, stood at the edge of the landing zone. The White House wanted the operation dressed up as a major victory, so Casey, sad-eyed and handsome, was there to brief reporters ferried out from Saigon for the day, along with a group of congressmen on a fact-finding mission. The facts were these. In 8 weeks of combing through the Cambodian jungle, U.S. and South Vietnamese troops had captured vast stores of munitions, rice, and other supplies in so-called enemy sanctuaries that had long been off-limits. They had fought several battles and reported killing or capturing more than 10,000 communist troops. But the invasion and the secret bombing that preceded it had destabilized Cambodia and achieved little that would help gain victory in Vietnam. The operation marked the beginning of the slow American pullout from Southeast Asia, a last push before the army, bloodied and tired after 5 years of combat, began going home for good. Casey didn't exaggerate the gains. The enemy, he knew, would recover, and the war would go on. But, he told the reporters, the operation had bought some time for their South Vietnamese allies, who soon would have to stand on their own. "I've done 2 tours over here," he yelled over the roar of the helicopter rotors, "and going into Cambodia was an opportunity we thought we'd never have." A week after the withdrawal from Cambodia, Casey climbed into the co-pilot seat of his Huey helicopter at 1st Air Cav headquarters and took off, flying east. He was headed for the U.S. base at Cam Ranh Bay to visit wounded soldiers. It was raining, and visibility was so poor that his chief of staff, Colonel Edward Shy Meyer, had urged him to cancel the trip, but he wanted to see his men before they were transferred to hospitals in Japan. The helicopter's path took it across Vietnam's mountainous central highlands. At about 10 a.m., his Huey flew into a dense cloud and disappeared. A second helicopter flying behind crisscrossed over the shrouded peaks, looking for any sign of the general's craft. But finally, they had to break off when its fuel began running low. The American military headquarters in Saigon ordered a massive search, not wanting to alert the Viet Cong that a high-ranking general was unaccounted for. It held off making a public announcement until a few days later. Casey's son, George Jr., was sitting in the apartment that he and his new wife, Sheila, shared on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C., near the Capitol, when the phone rang. It was his mother. "Your father's helicopter crashed. He's missing," she told him. As they spoke, George tried to sound optimistic, as painful as it was, but when he hung up and told Sheila the news, he was matter-of-fact. "Mom's hopeful," he said, "but you don't go down in one of those helicopters and survive." He knew the Army. He had grown up with it, and even at age 22, had its fatalism about death. Born in Japan on an Army base, he spent his childhood years moving every 2 years with his parents from one installation to another, an experience that had turned him into a jokester who made friends easily and applied himself as little as possible. George was the eldest of 5 Casey children and seemed the one least bothered by the war. In the spring of 1966, he had applied to go to the United States Military Academy at West Point, mostly to please his father, but his math grades had been too low to get in. He enrolled instead at Georgetown University just a few miles from his parents' brick colonial in Arlington, Virginia, across the Potomac River from the Georgetown campus. He signed up for the Army's Reserve Officer Training Corps program, played football, and always seemed to have the remnants of a six-pack stashed in his dorm room. Anger over the war was remaking the Georgetown campus. When George entered in 1966, male students still wore coats and ties to class, and more than 900 of his classmates were enrolled in the university's ROTC program. By the fall of 1969, the coats and ties were gone, and only 60 stalwarts were left in ROTC, including George. None of his friends had stayed in the program. "It was something I did by myself," he recalled. During his senior year, George worked at a bar, attended classes sporadically, and cruised around town on his motorcycle, which he had nicknamed Brutus. He scored mostly C's and D's, but figured his grades didn't matter. When he was done with college, he'd almost certainly be off to Vietnam, where his father was already on his second tour. George promised Sheila, the tall, pretty girl from Immaculata College he had started dating his junior year, that he wasn't going to be a career soldier like his dad. After his required 4-year hitch, he planned on attending law school. In April 1970, his dad came home from Vietnam to see his family before taking command of the 1st Air Cav. His new assignment meant a promotion. On April 30th, he pinned on the second star of a major general at a promotion ceremony at the Pentagon. That evening, the Caseys hosted a party at their house to celebrate.